At Worldwide Broadcasting, we have the unique opportunity to interview distinguished individuals who have made significant contributions to their respective industries and fields. Joining us today is Michelle Whittem, who is the owner of Whittem Law. How are you doing today, Michelle?
Hello.
Well, let's start with the basics. What kind of law do you practice?
My practice historically was grounded in labor and employment work, and it was based on addressing any and all matters that came up in the workplace related to the conduct of employees.
Okay.
Over time, it evolved as more and more employees became involved in basically cyber crimes directed against their employers. And so as my practice evolved, it has taken on a major focus on cyber security and privacy.
So you represent employers?
Well, yes, and other companies that have cybersecurity issues.
What kind of cybersecurity issues do you typically deal with?
Well, it ranges. Of course, initially, many of these things are, again, inside jobs, employees who are seeking to gain some benefit by acquiring company information and then using it in the marketplace to advance their own careers, that kind of thing. Over time, it's evolved to include also addressing external incursions. And increasingly, those external incursions are coming from other nation states that are trying to leverage their position in the cyber world by coming after U.S. targets, which are sophisticated, well-organized, have meaningful intellectual property.
So what kind of advantage are employees typically trying to get? Do you see mostly like credit card information or perhaps leveraging trade secrets?
It's the latter. The typical employee who's leaving with company data is leaving with information that they hope will help leverage them to a better position at their next engagement.
Do you see your company perhaps having a wider application as government organizations perhaps concerned about espionage?
That's certainly a factor. And in fact, I have a number of collaborative relationships with various people in related fields, and a very close working relationship in particular with individuals with significant government experience who are focused on the nation state issues.
So let's take a step back for a second and talk about you as a professional. Can you go into a little detail about your background in law?
Well, I was a late bloomer in law. I started life as an academic. I was on the faculty at Cornell University for a number of years. And I was an organizational sociologist. And I was struggling with the question of how does one actually organize and manage a society? Do we focus on the individuals and their behaviors and their consciences, or do we create structures that provide guidance for people in terms of their social interactions with others? And I came down on the side of organization, and that eventually caused me to focus on the law, which is a blunt but well-organized instrument for trying to manage social behaviors. And so I ended up going to law school after an academic career. I started practicing law at the ripe old age of 40.
Did you find it difficult to transition into the field?
No, not at all. It was very energizing, a lot of fun.
If you had to start your career over again, would you start out in law, or would you have started out in sociology as you had?
You know, I don't know. It's hard for me to say. The era that I was coming along, of course, was the go-go 60s. And people felt that they had all the options in the world. You know, we thought we were rewriting history. We thought we were positioned to make America something very different and special. I mean, you know, there was a lot of optimism and naivete in that period of time. It's hard to be where I am today and look back and think how I would have done anything differently. It was just an exciting period, and people followed their instincts and their hearts and in ways that I'm not sure everybody has that amount of freedom now.
And certainly some people feel that where they are now is a sum total of their experiences. So perhaps if you had started out in law, you may not have been the person you are today.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I've always felt that it was a tremendous opportunity that I had or made to find my way through to what I really was meant to do by taking various paths along the way. It was very enriching to have those backgrounds.
What would you say has been your greatest professional or personal accomplishment to date?
Oh, wow. I mean, this will sound kind of hokey, but for me, the importance of the law is the benefit that it brings in terms of helping to maintain an organized society so that all people have an opportunity to live a life that's undisrupted. That's my high-level commitment to the law. In terms of when I think about specific matters that I've been involved in that made a difference in people's lives, which I think all lawyers hope they're doing, I think the most important thing I ever done as a lawyer was to be involved in an early slave trafficking case here in Massachusetts that resulted in someone who had been kidnapped offshore and brought to the United States as a domestic servant was freed by the authorities. That always stands out in my mind as probably the best thing I ever did.
Now, it's always a little chilling when you think in this day and age we still have things like slavery and piracy.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately common. We know more about that now than we did back those many years ago when I was working with this young woman, but it's real. It's driven by certain nations in the world, and it's a terrifying experience for people.
Are there any factors that you think make you uniquely qualified in the field of law?
Well, I have to say, I think some this is maybe an odd connection, but I'm one of 10 kids, and I was the second oldest in the family. And you want to talk about mediating. I mean, it was just a brouhaha all the time. My parents were absolutely overwhelmed, loving and attentive, but, you know, you can't manage 10 kids. And we were kind of a mob. And that was the beginning of my negotiation skills, my all kinds of things that came from being in that kind of an environment, very rough and tumble. You know, in those days, it wasn't the one or two special children that got a lot of attention. It was, you know, kids go out there and figure it out and, by the way, get a job.
So let's talk about Whittam Law for a second. How old is the firm?
I have recently organized the firm after reaching mandatory retirement age from the company that I worked at for many years. And I wasn't prepared to stop practicing law, and so I quickly reorganized and created my own business.
Yeah, many lawyers have reservations about retiring.
Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, it's a, you know, they say it's a learned profession. And if you are still energetic, and you obviously have years of experience in training.
Mm-hmm.
I've found it to be a wonderful profession. I'm also moving in a somewhat new direction, and that's energizing as well. I'm teaming up with some individuals who are very highly placed in the cybersecurity world, and we're actually working on a collaborative business plan where they would bring technical expertise and I would bring legal expertise to a practice.
And I think another aspect of it is law is sort of unique in that it attracts a certain breed of highly motivated individuals. If you're not very highly motivated, you won't make it very far as a lawyer. So I think it's just the nature of that type of person. If you reach a position of success, just by nature, you don't really want to let that go.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's the definitely highly motivated people, but also somewhat vision-oriented also.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most people who practice law, whatever their passion is in the law, they have deep thoughts about that, what's interesting about it, why they think it's important. I mean, it's the law is the underlying, it's the one sort of common thread in an organized society, the rules of engagement. And having an intelligent and compassionate and well-organized legal system, I think if you look around the world, it really makes a difference.
Of course. So what would be your typical clientele? If someone were listening to this and considering your services, what would be something you would look for in a potential client?
So the clients that I have worked with over the years span across a variety of industries because the competencies that I have are fundamental to any company. So, for example, any successful company has a boatload of employees. That's always an area where problems are cropping up. And increasingly, and this is why my career has branched in a new direction over the last several years, increasingly they have concerns about the oversight and management of their cybersecurity functions.
So any company that is large and operates, at least to some extent, online?
Well, certainly, I mean, large companies are very intelligent on these issues and often have significant in-house capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But I've worked with companies across the spectrum, from startups to major global organizations. And I think that since most companies now, when I started down the cyber road, it was early for many companies, and they were still getting the basics in place, what the rules of the road were, who could do what when, with what data, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most companies have come very far down the road. They're internally well organized. They know what they need and what they lack. So the practice has moved much more in the direction of addressing problems, you know, things that arise in the normal course in connection with the management and protection and transmission and so on of their data.
Would you say that this is somewhat of a new area of law, or perhaps is it close to, I don't want to say reaching its saturation point, but the point where there would be less demand for it?
Well, I definitely think it's an established area at this point.
Okay.
You know, my career has spanned the early glimmers through now to an era where anybody who's thoughtful about their company obviously has in-house capability.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I think it's matured quite a bit. Where I see a lot of the work going now is often when a company has an issue, although they have all the in-house technical capability and often legal capability, they still are looking for an outside perspective. That's a place where senior people are helpful. And also, the other recurrent issue is working with people who have connections to various authorities. Because at this point, if you have a problem with your protecting your cyber assets, you're dealing often with criminal situations. And that means having someone who can step up and speak for the company with various authorities, government watchdogs, and things like that. And that's much more where the practice is today.
So let's look at the future for a minute. This is a new firm. You've got an exciting new future. What do you see for yourself in, let's say, the next 5 years?
Wow. The next 5 years. Well, the early direction that this is taking is working with local government and state authorities on helping them to bring their cyber sophistication in line with what's happened much more naturally in the private sector. It's a question of resources. It's a question of enough human capability, all the assets that you need to put world-class programs and assets in place. It's just a slower curve for public sector organizations. And so the clients that I'm working with now have that profile.
And if there are clients that are interested in reaching out to your firm and its services, what would be the best way to get in contact with you?
Well, you know, this is the internet era, so I'm operating right now out of an email account.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest way to reach people. The email address is going to change as my evolving partnership comes more online, but currently I'm at michelleawittam@gmail.com.
Okay, that's Michelle with one L, A. Whittam, at gmail.com. Okay. So, Michelle, at this point, I would ask if there's anything that we may not have covered that you would like to.
You know, the only thing, you get to a certain point in your career, and you step back and ask the question about life in the law. And I'm unsure as to what the next generation of lawyers is thinking about. We've seen changes in the number of people who are going to law school, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some sense that there's some saturation in the market.
Yes.
At the same time, the boomers are aging out, and so there's going to be also a very large shift in the market. And so I don't have a sense of how people who are contemplating joining the law now are viewing that, but it seems to me that while we've come through a period of what I think of as saturation, I think that people who have that interest will find that in relatively short order there will be a real new opportunity as people of my generation decide they've had enough and start to pull themselves out of the market.
If they do so.
Yep. Well, and as we know, you know, we're rewriting, the boomers are rewriting the book in terms of what retirement is and whether one retires and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, if we're smart, we're going to wake up and say at some point, you know, I really need to take that trip to Kilimanjaro.
Thank you, Michelle, for sharing your experiences with us. You're an inspiration to your field, and we appreciate you for taking the time to speak to our listeners. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Worldwide Broadcasting. We look forward to providing you with additional engaging interviews with professionals around the country and abroad.